Hey there, podcast listeners, it's Tom here. As you may know, at my church, we're currently going through a 12-week series preaching through Ephesians. This is lots of fun. However, I am only preaching about 50% of these sermons. As a result, on the weeks that I'm not preaching from the series, I'm going to be uploading something old. So if you want to hear every sermon in the series, you can go and search for Mitcham Baptist Church on iTunes and everything should be there. This week and next week, however, I'm putting up here on the podcast a two-part seminar that I gave at Soul Survivor called Busting Sex Myths. I hope you enjoy it.
Not married. I don't often indulge in sex. I don't at all, really. So kind of getting me to do a talk on sex is like getting Britney Spears to talk about igloo construction or Kanye West talk about humility. So, you know, I'm doing this, but this is the youth stream, which means probably most of you aren't married. Is anyone here married? Excellent. So, if you are not married and you're a Christian, then you probably shouldn't be having sex. And I am an expert at not having sex. I have been not having sex for longer than you guys have been alive. I was not having sex when man walked on the moon. I was not having sex when Tutankhamun was doing his thing. Yeah, I'm really good at not having sex. So let me just give you a few disclaimers before we start. The first one is that because we are talking about sex, there may be things which I say which you go, "Oh, that's a little bit offensive. Don't know that you should be talking about that." I'm going to try not to be any more explicit than the Bible is, but the Bible does get quite explicit at times, so I may not even go as far as the Bible. Or I might, because it could be fun. The second one is that sex is a huge topic that we can't really cover it all in just one morning seminar, or we can't cover it all in two morning seminars. There's a lot of things that I'm not going to cover. Because sex, it covers everything from that little bit of flirting that I do with the checkout chick at Woolies to whether me and my wife can go and have an orgy with animals. And and the Bible covers all of that. I hope, if you're offended now, it's probably time to leave. But we're not going to cover the whole spectrum, but we will cover some of it. I'm probably going to be more theological and more theoretical than practical today. But what you all have there is you have pieces of paper and pens, which means that if you think of a question, you can write it down. It means you don't have to put up your hand and say, "Oh, my friend is attracted to the couch. What should I do?" You can just write it down, and then the questions will come down, and then I'll try and answer them at the end. And hopefully then we'll get into all the things that you actually want to ask about, rather than me having to try and cover that. If you've got someone sitting next to you who you think might look at your question and go, "Oh, that's what their issue is," I'm sorry, I can't help that. Just try and hide it, fold it, and send it down. So that's the thing. Some of the things I won't be covering. I won't be covering sexual technique, which is hopefully fine for all of you because you're not married, and I don't have any idea what you do. Hold hands. Go from there. The next thing that I need to say is that because we are covering the topic of sex, this will be a sensitive issue for some of you. We are a large group of people, which means that there will be people here who have been sexually abused. So if you are someone who you find this is uncomfortable and you find it something that if you're not coping well with it, then feel free to tune out. Feel free to doodle, feel free to fall asleep, to pray, to imagine everyone dressed as farm animals. Do whatever you want. I'm not going to be offended. But if abuse is something that is an issue for you, then you do need to be talking about it with someone. You can get healing. Jesus is bigger. Jesus will be there for you. But you need to talk to someone about it, and let me encourage you to do that. If that's the only thing that I tell you that you hear today, then hear that. I think that's all the disclaimers that I have to do. The plan is, so what we're going to do today is we're going to cover the world's myths about sex. After we've done that, then we're going to talk about the biblical view of sex, and then we're going to see how that's applied. Then I'm going to answer some of your questions. Then tomorrow, we're going to cover the church's view of sex. We're going to have a little bit of my story about when I was a pimp in Holland. That's not true. But we will cover a bit of my story. And then we're going to go on there and we're going to end up by talking about the death and resurrection of Jesus and how that relates into sex. And you guys are going, oh, I didn't know that was connected. But it is. And then after that, then we will answer some more of your questions. So that's everything. Hopefully you'll see at the end of all this that sex is a good gift of God that He has given us to glorify Him. That's pretty much the big picture that we are getting today. So how about I pray, and then we will start. Dear Jesus, we thank You that You are good. We thank You that You have given us Yourself. We thank You that You have given us sex. I pray, God, that You will be helping us to be people who use this gift well and use it to glorify You. Pray this in Your name. Amen. All right, so I figured that if we want to understand what the world is saying about sex, the best place that we can start by looking is in the top 10. So I went on to metrolyrics.com, as you do, and they have all those dodgy ads, which are really annoying, and I found the lyrics to what is at number 3 on the ARIA chart at the moment. This is I Like That by Richard Vision. Is that how you say it? Does anyone know how to say it? Yeah, the double S is throwing me right off. And no one ever announces the name of the singers on the radio anymore. It kind of hurts my feelings. So this is some of the lines. It says, I like that my body rocks a rhythm. You beat my drum hard. I might just kick it. You wanna lick it. I love to stick it. From London to LA. Yeah, that's the ticket. Come on and kiss it. It may not be sexual. I might just be putting innuendo straight in there. The next one, I'm pretty sure I'm just putting the innuendo straight in there. This is at number 10 on the ARIA chart. This is a little ditty by Rihanna, which goes, tonight I'm going to let you be the captain. Tonight I'm going to let you do your thing, yeah. Tonight I'm going to let you be a rider. Giddy up, babe. Tonight, I'm going to let you be fire. Tonight, I'm going to let you take me higher. Tonight, baby, we can get it on, yeah. We can get it on, yeah. Do you like it, boy? I want what you want. Give it to me, baby, like boom, boom, boom. So there you go. That's Rude Boy by Rihanna. May or may not be sexual. Maybe. Not sure. Trying to figure that one out. If we see that, we see that the world is obsessed with sex. And the first myth that the world gives us is that if you are not having sex, then there is something wrong with you. We hear it on the radio, we see it on the TV, everybody is talking about it. People are talking about how to have better sex, how to pick up, how to have longer lasting sex. How to get a friend with benefits, how to get rid of a friend with benefits, how to make sure a friend with benefits stays a friend with benefits and doesn't become someone you're a little more attached to, and that gets a little bit annoying if you want to get someone else who is a boyfriend or girlfriend with benefits. There's so much happening and you've got so much you have to think about because everyone is telling you to have sex, and if you're not having sex, then you should be trying to have sex. I do some work at concert venues, and I went. There was a big concert on in Sydney, and the support act got up, and they were talking to everyone. They said, "We hope that when you go home tonight, that every single person here tonight gets laid." And then everyone went, "Woo!" because they all thought that was a good idea. Funnily enough, on the cover of I think it was last week's Zoo magazine, there were 70 jokes guaranteed to get you laid. And I thought, I've been telling the wrong jokes my whole life because I had no idea what kind of jokes you tell that gets you laid, but they must be pretty spectacular. I almost bought it, but then I thought I'd feel seedy, so I shouldn't do that. In a 2008 study of Australian schools, people in school between years 10 and years 12, 56% of all year 12 students had said that they had had sexual intercourse. And 30% of all students said that they had had 3 or more partners within the last year. Surveys have found that the majority of Australians have sex at least once a month. Oh, sorry, at least several times a month. And everyone is talking about sex. And the message is, if you're not having sex, then something is wrong with you. When I was in high school, I used to cop a bit of flack for the fact that I wasn't having sex. It wasn't my high school. It was a high school I was working in. There was a girl there. I was there teaching scripture. And she said to me, "So you're a Christian, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she goes, "So what do Christians think about sex?" And I said, "Well, Christians believe that sex should happen only in the marriage of a man and a woman." She goes, "So are you married?" And I said, "No." She said, "So have you had sex?" And I said, "No." She said, "So you're a virgin." She was very quick. And then from then on, she called me Tom the Virgin. And whenever she saw me around the school, she'd say, "Hi, Tom the Virgin." And then she turned to her friend and said, "That's Tom the Virgin." She'd see me at the shops and go, "It's Virgin Tom." And that's the name that got around the school for me. The thing is that if you're not having sex, then there is something wrong with you. And we as Christians are going to feel that acutely if we are people who live in the world. The second one is that sex between two consenting adults is okay if no one gets hurt. That's the myth. I had a look on the net to find out some information and some advice for me about how to have sex for the first time. I decided I'm 27, I should know these things. So the advice that the internet told me was that first I have to make sure that I take all the necessary precautions. I have to make sure that I have talked to the person about it, that we are clear about what we want, and that if I feel that I am ready, then I am ready. But I have to make sure that I feel like it's the right time, otherwise I don't do it. If having sex is just about feeling like it's the right time, then I felt like it was the right time about 12 years ago, and I've been wasting my time the rest of till now. That's it. If sex is okay, if people are consenting and no one gets hurt, it gets reduced to that. The third one is that sex is purely physical, so if it feels good, do it. There's a song that was out a while ago by the Bloodhound Gang, which is probably a... Do you guys know the Bloodhound Gang?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't go look them up. But they're a little bit funny. Anyway, the song was, you probably know it, so it goes, "You and me, baby, ain't nothing but mammals, so let's do it like they do on the Discovery Channel." The idea being that we are just animals, and so we can have sex because we are like animals. I'm pretty sure they didn't literally mean do it like they do on the Discovery Channel, which would mean, like, you know, go into the bush, have sex in front of a camera, and then eat your mate afterwards. Like, But you get the picture. Number four is that for women, if you show off your body and you have sex, then it is empowering. The ideas of feminism and the sexual revolution have made it so that people have felt it important that they play out their liberation on the landscape of sexuality. So that people decide that they have sex to show that they are free from society's expectations of them. It seems odd that you have sex to show that you're free of society's expectations if society's expectations are that you have sex. But that's just what's going on. One person commented on one of the websites I was looking at about Rihanna's song, "A Rude Boy," saying that it is a song about a woman's sexual freedom. Because that's so important. And if you listen to a lot of the songs that are out these days, the most explicit sexual songs are by women, showing how empowered the women are. That the women are the sexual predators in the songs, because that's okay. Last year, Miranda Kerr, the model, she posed nude on the cover of Rolling Stone to save koalas. Now, I don't know how taking your clothes off saves any koalas, but I'm sure the koalas and teenage boys are very thankful for her efforts. And about the photo shoot, this is what she said. She said, "The great thing about having people recognize you is that you can make a positive difference. That's what I'm trying to do, especially for young women." So you hear that, young women? If you want to make a positive difference, take your clothes off. It is a little bit insane. Number five is that pornography doesn't hurt anyone. The Australian pornography industry has an annual revenue of over $2 billion. In the Australian sex census, 80% of men and 69% of females who took part said that they found pornography helpful. In another survey, two-thirds of Australians say that they didn't think that pornography was offensive. And this is what one porn star had to say about the beneficial effects of porn. She said, "I get many emails from couples thanking me for saving their marriage. They watch my movies together, or from those couples I give advice to, and lonely men who can't find sexual pleasures, or who are disabled, or who turn to porn for pleasure. There are many things that I see on a daily basis which help me realize that porn is helpful in society." Yet, she says this about working in the porn industry. Being a porn star can definitely take its toll on your emotional well-being. It messes with your head sometimes. Being naked and having sex for a living, that's not normal to anyone. It's something that you just kind of set your mind to. And when you convince yourself that something is okay to do, then you seem to have no trouble doing it. But some of the girls really can't handle it, and that's when they turn to drugs and alcohol. So despite what happens in the porn industry, despite the effects that it has on the people who are working in it, we still say porn is okay and porn doesn't hurt anyone. So if these are the world's ideas about sex, then what do we do with them? And are they all myths, and do they fall down anywhere? So I could now set out to convince you of all the reasons why you shouldn't have sex because of the bad things about sex. I could say that, you know, sex outside of marriage is no fun. I could tell you that sex, you know, I could tell you about the rates of STIs that you get from having sex. So there's a lot of people staring at the tractor, which is, it's interesting, I understand. Tractors and sex, they go together. I'm not going to follow that one up. What was I talking about? You can get STIs. I could tell you about the amount of abortions that I had. I could tell you that, you know, people go so far as to say that if you have sex outside of marriage, then you will die. It's, you know, there's a joke in Mean Girls about that, but it's but people actually use that to teach it. Because, like, you have sex, you'll get AIDS, and you get AIDS, then you die. Don't have sex. So, there are lots of people having sex, and they're not dead. It doesn't really make sense. And if you say that sex outside of marriage is no fun, then why are all these people having sex outside of marriage? It's not like, you know, people are like, "I'm a man, you're a woman, we're not Christians, damn it, we better sleep with each other." This is so tough. People enjoy sex outside of marriage. Sex is fun. That's why they do it. And don't hear the things that people say to say that sex is not fun, because it is, and that's why people are doing it. And God made it to be good. And so people find that they enjoy it. So we need to find something more than just the negative consequences of having sex outside of marriage to deal with. I could go with the positive view on you. I could say that if you have sex and save it till marriage, then you'll have a much better sex life. Or I could tell you that, you know, if you have sex only within marriage, then you'll never get an STI. You know, and these things are true, but they will fall down eventually. Because our view of sex can't be based on pragmatic stuff and what works. We have to base it on something bigger. And God has revealed himself to us through the Bible, and so it's to the Bible that we have to turn, because in the Bible, it gives us eternal truth. So we are going to look at the Bible. You know, for Christians, we've often been negative about sex. We've talked about, you know all the reasons why sex is bad, but the Bible wants to say that sex is good. One of the quotes that I put in the program about this was from an American country singer called Butch Hancock, and the whole quote goes like this. It goes, "Life in Lubbock, Texas taught me two things. One is that God loves you and you're going to burn in hell. The other is that sex is the most awful, filthy thing on earth and you should save it for someone you love. Contrary to this, the Bible has a very high view of sex. In fact, it has a higher view of sex than any other religion, and it has a higher view of sex than the world is going to try and sell us. We hear the message that, you know, sex is so precious that you have to save it for someone you love, and you have to save it for the person that you're married to, which is true, but the Bible has an even higher view of sex than that. It's even bigger than just you saving something special for the person that you're going to marry. So we need to look at the Bible. So if you've got a Bible, open it up to Genesis chapter 1. Specifically, we're going to chapter 1, verse 28. And this happens after God has created Adam, and God has created Eve. And the very first thing that God says to Adam and Eve is not, he doesn't see them, and he doesn't say, hello, good morning. They don't wake up. And he doesn't say, hello, welcome to earth. His first command to Adam and Eve, the very first thing that he says is, have sex. That's what he says. It says, be fruitful and increase in number. So, you know, like, that's it. It's have sex. Like, if this is not the most awesome God in the world, I don't know what is. Boys, if the first thing on your mind is sex, don't feel bad about it. That's the first thing God put into Adam's mind. He's like, go for it. And you know what? It's probably the one command that the whole of the earth has been successful at fulfilling since the beginning of time. In Genesis 2, in the parallel creation account, God creates Adam and says, it is not good for man to be alone. So he creates Eve as his companion. And when Adam sees Eve, he is so excited that he bursts into poetry. And you know a guy is excited when he starts making up poetry. And this is what he says about Eve. He says, bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, she shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. And this is then followed up by the Bible's paradigmatic. It's the big... big sentence about sex. This is the one that Paul quotes and Jesus quotes. This is 2:24 and 25, and it says, for this reason, man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. The man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. In this statement, we see that there is a specific order to sex. And that sex is about so much more than just what happens physically. That it has a very special function. The order is that first that a man will leave his mother and his father, or a woman will leave her mother and her father, and then she will get married to the man, and he will get married to the woman. And then, once they are married, then they will become one flesh and they will consummate their marriage. But it goes in that order. It goes, leave the home, make the commitment, then have sex. And it goes in that order. And that's what the Bible is telling us here. But we see that when this happens, that when the two people have sex, they become one flesh. It doesn't mean that they just hang out together and they bump and grind a bit. It means that there's a whole lot more going on. It means that they become, in essence, spiritually one person. It means that the concerns of one person are the concerns of the other. That the spirit of one person is wholly intertwined with the spirit of the other person. It means that they are effectively a unit that has to stick together for the rest of their lives. And when we take sex out of that context, then we do spiritual violence to sex and we do spiritual violence to each other because we are ripping things apart which shouldn't be ripped apart. When people have sex, they're saying, I give all of myself to you. And that should only happen at the point when people say, I will give all of myself to you for all of time that I have with you. We need to make sure that sex stays within the context of marriage. When we have sex outside of marriage, we are taking some of the benefits of marriage and without making the commitment that marriage requires. The physical nakedness of a couple goes with the nakedness that happens within the whole of marriage. It's not just physical nakedness, but emotional nakedness and lifestyle nakedness, that you are wholly bare yourself to the other and say, I will be accepted by you because we are committed to each other, and I will accept you because we are committed to each other. That's what's going on. It's a huge deal. And when we treat sex like something other than that, then we degrade sex. Like, I'm someone who loves fruit salad. Like, I think fruit salad is fantastic, but I don't really like rock melon. And if I get a fruit salad, then it's perfectly acceptable for me to get rid of the rock melon. It's not like, you know, I have to commit to the whole of the fruit salad if I want to eat a fruit salad. And I don't have to, you know, tell the fruit salad that I love it to convince it to give me some of its strawberries. Or I don't have to say, I'll give you some of my fingers if you give me some of your grapes. Like, it's not like we have some kind of deal that we have to make. Fruit salad is all mine, and I'll eat it and do whatever I want with the fruit salad. And I can pick and choose, I can get rid of it, I can throw it out, and when it goes off, I can get rid of it if I want to. Sex and relationships are not like fruit salad, but we treat them like fruit salad. We'll say, I'll take the bits that I like, and I'll leave the bits that I don't like. And when it goes off, then I'll just get rid of it, and I'll find something new that I like. We can't do it like that. And we don't treat other relationships of commitment like that in our lives. Like, it's not like our parents will have a kid, and they go, you know what? We're going to have a baby, and we'll carry it around, and we'll show it off, we'll push it in the pram, and everyone will come up and say, oh, that's a nice kid. And you say, yeah, it's a nice kid. And then at some point, you say, oh, I'm a little bit bored of this kid. It's not as cute as it used to be. We'll get rid of it, and we'll go get a new kid. You'll say, that's appalling. Because when you have a child, you commit to the child for the life of the child. And the same thing should be happening with sex and marriage, that you say, you know what, I'm going to give myself to this person, I'll commit myself to this person forever and for always. We need to treat it not like fruit salad, but like a relationship that we commit to for life. All right, so now we get to move on to the New Testament. And we see that when we get to the New Testament, something even bigger happens with sex than just the two people becoming one. This is what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5. He talks about how the marriage of a man and a woman is like the picture of Christ's love for the church. It says this, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. That is how high God's view of sex is. That the joining of a man and a woman within marriage is like the love and commitment that Christ has for the church. That God has given us sex to be a picture of the gospel. The gospel is the greatest demonstration of God's love for the world. The gospel shows that God is willing to come to us, to be naked and die on a cross for us and give all of himself for us so that we can have life. And this gospel is pointed to in sex. And when we treat sex as something less than that, then we are saying that we want to degrade the love of Christ that he has for the church. That when we save sex till marriage, then we say, I believe in God's exclusivity of love for us and my exclusivity of love for God. When we take sex out of marriage, then we say, I do not believe that it is important that God is exclusively in love with us, and I'm exclusively in love with him. It's not like Jesus came down to earth and he hung around and he was like, okay guys, you guys over there, if you want to come and hang out with me a bit, I'll love you for a bit, I'll die for you a little bit, but when I get bored of you, I'm going to give up on you. And these people are like, yeah, we've got a savior for a little while, and then he'll leave us. It doesn't happen like that, because Jesus says, I give myself to you forever. And we get this picture of sex, so we know that what God's love for us is like. All right, So, really quickly, I'm going to give us 5 reasons why God gave us sex. The first one is procreation. That means that you have sex, you have babies. You learn about that in school. Babies are good. It says in the Bible that children are a blessing from God, and God wants people to have sex and make babies. The second one is consummation. It says the two become one flesh. So that when people get married, they have sex and they consummate their marriage. And every time they have sex afterwards, they continue to consummate their marriage and cement the bond that they have for one another. The third one is love. And people are regularly connecting love and sex together. But whether or not they connect love to sex so that they will get sex or so they will get love is a different matter. But the Bible wants to say that love and sex are connected. And the book which shows us this the best is Song of Songs. Don't laugh. You can't laugh about the Bible. This is in chapter 8, verses 5 to 7. This is what it says about love and sex. Under the apple tree, I aroused you. There your mother conceived you, and there she was in labor, gave you birth. Place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death. Its jealousy as unyielding as the grave. It burns like blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot wash it away. If one were to give all the wealth of his house for love, it would be utterly scorned. Sex is an expression of love. And it may not be the deepest, greatest expression of love, but it is, for humans, the most intimate, a most soul-giving expression of love that one person can have for another. And so it has to stay within the context of marriage. The fourth one is that sex is there for pleasure. God wants people to enjoy sex. It wasn't an accident that sex was enjoyable. Again, Song of Songs shows us this clearly. Listen to this. This is a woman talking to her husband. She says, like an apple tree among the trees of the forest is my lover among the young men. I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. If your mind is going there, then it probably should be. He has taken me to the banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. Strengthen me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. His left arm is under my head, and his right arm embraces me. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. Or listen to this, of what a man has to say about his wife. He says, how beautiful you are and how pleasing, O love, with your delights. Your stature is like that of the palm, and your breasts like clusters of fruit. I said, I will climb the palm tree and I will take hold of its fruit. May your breasts be like the clusters of the vine and your fragrance, the fragrance of your breath like apples and your mouth like the best wine. That sounds like fun. And if you think that the Bible is prudish, then you try going up to someone and saying, let me climb your palm tree and take hold of your fruit. And then you'll learn that the Bible is not for prudes. Sex is for pleasure. Finally, God gives us sex to glorify God. As we see in the Bible, sex is a picture of God's love for the church. It is a picture of God's commitment to us. It is a picture of the goodness that He gives us within marriage. It shows us the love that two people can have for each other and the way that they should be giving themselves to each other. When people have sex well, they glorify God. God is pushing people to be having sex well so they can glorify Him. So if there's any application in all this, it's this. If you are not married, then when you get married, have sex and have it well. Have sex to make babies, have sex to have fun, have sex to consummate your marriage, have sex to show the person that you love them, have sex which is you giving yourself to the other so that you can serve them. Have sex so that you can create this bond which will point people to the love that Christ has for His church. But if you are not married, which is pretty much all of us, we may have had some married people sneak in, as they do, because they're sneaky. But if...
I heard that.
If you are not married, then your job is to not have sex, because that glorifies God too. Because that is a picture of God's exclusive love for the church. That when you wait till marriage, you say, God gives himself to one church and I give myself to one God and I give myself to one man or to one woman in one marriage. That we say, this sex is too good to give out. That my body is too precious to give to anyone. I will wait until marriage. So there we go. That is the biblical view of sex. I know I haven't covered everything. Tomorrow we're going to cover a whole lot more. I didn't even, specifically go through and debunk all the myths. And, if you need me to, I can. But now I think it is question time. If anyone has any questions, you can pass your questions along to that end of the row if you have any. Anyone?
Yeah, pass your questions along.
We can answer them. Or I'll try. I may not be any good at it. If you want to put your hand up, hand up. Would you like to ask?
Some of my friends are right back. I would love to know about that. I think
that's wrong. So the question is for the Christians at your Christian school, whether or not these people have said that if they know that the guy is the right guy, they won't save themselves till marriage, that they'll give themselves in sex, and whether or not that is wrong. I think the Bible pretty clearly does show us that is wrong. Like we saw in Genesis, it gives us a really clear picture of the order of sex. That when we have sex, that it comes after the commitment. Because if it becomes before the commitment, then you want to take something in out of its right order. And often people say, I think this person is the right person. And then they'll have sex and then they'll go, oh, maybe they're not the right person after all. And they'll go away. Like there is no surety there. There's not even surety within marriage. We see it clear enough in the marriages of our parents and the marriages of our friends' parents. Like we know that there is no surety there. But the completeness of marriage means that sex has to live only within marriage. If you think about the amount of people that you thought, I'm going to marry them, and then none of you are married to them, probably, unless you're one of the sneaky married people. You can't be sure of something. And when you get into marriage, then the point is that you stick at marriage because you are committed to marriage. That marriage is something more than just what your feelings are. But before that, you can get out at any time. And so, sex has to be saved for being within marriage. Here we go. Here's some more questions. This is a question from yesterday. Whatever happened to little Teddy? Oh, yeah, I realized I didn't finish that answer. I lost my Teddy once, and I never found him again. Oh, and that was sad.
Oh.
Yeah, we did search. All right, next one. Here's a good question. What about masturbation? There are two questions here. Well, let's just go with that one. What about masturbation? Okay, so the Bible never specifically addresses masturbation. It's not in there. I have heard one person say that you can find it addressed in Proverbs where it says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. I'm pretty sure that's not about masturbation. And some people are like, obviously the Bible is clear about masturbation. It just hasn't mentioned it. And sometimes I think, well, that's because the Bible is an ancient book. I can promise you, masturbation was invented way before the Bible was written. Like, the people in the Bible, they knew about masturbation. It's not like something that we're so modern, we've discovered ourselves. Oh, look at that. What the Bible does say, and there's lots of different views about masturbation. Some people go all the way and say you should never, ever masturbate because it's absolutely terrible. Some people say, yeah, sure, go for it. Knock yourself out, have a good time. So I'm not going to draw a really, really clear line, but what I am going to say is that often masturbation often, perhaps always, masturbation is connected not just to the physical act of masturbation, but to fantasy and to lust. And the Bible is clear about lust. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5 that whoever looks lustfully at a woman has committed adultery in his heart. Or if you are not married, then it will be that you have had sex outside of marriage in your heart. And so if you are lusting after someone so that you can masturbate, then you are, in your mind, having sex outside of marriage. So we need to make sure we keep a lid on lust, and masturbation often is something that comes out of lust and can lead to greater lust. The other issue with masturbation is that it can be something that people find addictive. And the Bible is clear that what Paul says in, I think it's 1 Corinthians 6, he goes, everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. Everything is permissible, but I shall not be mastered by anything. And if we find that we are addicted to masturbation, that we cannot go through a day or a week or a month without masturbating because it just gets too hard, then we have become mastered by it. And the only master that we should have is the master of Christ. And so we need to be working against that. That said, I just want to, masturbation is something that is necessarily a private thing, and I thank everyone for that. But it means then that we don't talk about it a lot, and that when people are struggling with masturbation, they can feel really, really guilty about it. And it's, it is, if you are doing it in a way that is lustful and sinful, which probably is most of you or all of you if you are masturbating, then it is a sin, but it is also something that Jesus will help you with and that you get forgiven for. And it's no greater sin than the other sins that are around for us to commit. So you don't have to keep beating yourself up about it, going, oh my goodness, I'm the worst person ever and God hates me because I'm filthy and disgusting. God doesn't think you're filthy and disgusting because he has sent Jesus to make you clean. So remember that one. All right, the next question on this sheet of paper is, how far are Christians allowed to go before it's called sex? Oral, etc. I'm assuming that's oral sex, not oral exams. this is a question that everyone likes to ask about sex. How far can I go? Because there's a whole lot of things we want to do, and if we can say, I can do that and it's still not called sex, I can still be a virgin and still be pure when I get into marriage. I think I heard an analogy once that when you're in a relationship, the best thing you should be doing is, thinking about how you can honor the other person and how far you can go without getting turning it into lust, and without getting to a point where it's too hard for you to come back. So he gave this analogy where it's like you're on an escalator, and you can be on the escalator, and you're going up the escalator, and you realize that at the top of the escalator, there's a roof, and the escalator just goes straight into the roof. And if you catch the escalator, then you just go boom, straight through. I don't know why someone would build an escalator like that. Could be funny to watch. But the idea being that if you stay on it, then you will smash your head. And so some of us, we decide that sex, we'll treat it like the escalator and we'll go as far up the escalator as possible before we're going to smash our head. Then we'll turn around and we'll run back down, and by the time we get to the bottom, we're all hot and bothered and it's terrible. And so if you go so far that it's going to be really, really hard for you to stop because you have pushed yourself to a point where you don't think you can come back, then you've definitely gone too far. If you can go up to one step of the escalator, turn around and come off, then it's not going to be too much hassle for you. It's not too hard. Now, I know I haven't put clear boundaries on it. Probably some clear boundaries we can say is that oral sex is sex. There is a clear intimacy there that is going on, and that God makes nakedness to be for a man and a woman within the context of marriage, and that when we have genital contact with someone else, then we are going too far and we're doing something which should only be for within marriage. If people want to do it within marriage, that's totally up to them and they can do whatever is useful for them. But outside of marriage, we should stay away from it. And there's oral sex for you, but there's a whole lot of other things, you know, what can you touch, and, you know, can you dry hump, is that allowed? Try and go, how can I be honouring the person that I'm with? And how can I be honouring the person that I am going to marry? And if there's someone with my future husband or wife at the moment, what do I want them doing with them? And if you can use that as a guide, then that will be helpful. I know I've been vague. I'm kind of being intentionally vague, because for everyone it's going to be different. Some people it's like, holding hands, that makes me way too excited, so let's not do that. And if that's you, don't feel bad. Because, you know, you're going to have an excellent sex life, because everything after holding hands is going to be very enjoyable. So you've got a lot to look forward to. But, you know, so you have to know where you are and know where the person you are is at. All right, we have time for two more, which is good, because we have two more questions. What if a couple do not wish to be married, maybe due to past experience, but love each other regardless, just like any married couple? Do you believe that they should have sex despite not being married? We sort of covered that one by saying that, you know, sex should only happen within marriage. We kind of have this thing that sex is so important that we need, that it should be free from the boundaries of marriage. Like, we feel like, you know, this is this thing that God has given us, and we feel so excited about it that we have to be doing it, which is not the case. You can live without having sex. I'm not dead yet. I've survived 27 years, and I'll probably keep going for longer. Sex is not so important that you have to be having it. Obeying God is so important that you need to be doing it. And if God says this is the way it is, then if nothing else, we need to be obedient to God and say, my commitment to God is going to live above my feelings. So if these two people feel like from past experience that they don't want to get married, then I would say to them, maybe you should be working through your issues about marriage. Maybe you should be talking to people who are married, talking to a counselor, working through that, so that you can see marriage as the gift that God has given, rather than saying, well, what can I do to get the benefits of marriage without being married, because I find marriage too hard. If marriage is too hard for you, then you need to sort that out, not just try and go and have sex. Last one. Is phone sex bad? Because I heard you might get hearing aids. Yeah. I don't need to answer that question. No, you guys know that you do get hearing aids. It's very, just don't turn it up too loud. It'll destroy your eardrum. No, don't have phone sex. Because that would be lust, and that's not a good idea. Alright, if you have any other questions, if you want to talk to someone more, then there'll be a few of us hanging around afterwards. We can talk to you, we can pray with you. Tomorrow we'll be covering stuff in more detail. Tomorrow we'll be talking about the church's myths about sex. So if you want to hear more, come back. If you don't, go to another seminar. They're probably good too. Thank you very much, guys. It's been fun.